Good morning, fantasy baseball lovers. It's your old pal Mike Carter here, back with you. Episode 10 of Breakfast with the Beats, if you can believe that already. I can count, Dave, I can count again. I know this is episode 10. We're back for our 10th show, and we're bringing a special guest on for the first time. This is the first time that we're having anybody be a guest, and it's really not much of a guest when you think about it. It's a blast from our past, from back in the day, last year. Last couple years doing some shows with our good friend Chris Torres. Torres is the man who you might remember tapes his mouth shut while sleeping at night to reduce snoring. The same man who also endorses wearing Grimace costumes to try to bring his team a winning streak. They could probably use that right now in New York, the way that it looks. The same guy who advocates drinking bone broth and who for years was drinking garlic as well, but is now, we've learned, recovered from the thinking of that. Chris, welcome back. Man, it's good to see you. How you been?
It's good to see you guys. I've been good, man. It's, you know, I was just telling you, like my microphone is dust all over it. It's been a while, so it feels good to be back here and especially be back here with the two of you. I've missed you guys. I know we keep in touch, you know, via text, but I mean, we saw each other every week for how many, you know, like 2-3 years, 3 years,
yes,
actually, me and you, Mike. And then,
yes, sir.
So to, you know, to not have that as part of my life has been an adjustment. But yeah, I've been good. Been spending more time with family. You know, just, managing, I'm not taking a step back from fantasy. I still have plenty of teams that I'm managing. So yeah, everything is good. I mean, I will say though, I didn't tell you guys, I was just in the hospital, with appendicitis.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I had to have my appendix removed. So that was quite an experience. So that was last week. But I will say, since I got my appendix out, Matt Chapman has been unstoppable. He has like 5 home runs. So I got it out last Monday, and since then he's like one of the league leaders in every, he's just been absolutely crushing it. So I am going to take credit for that. I needed that because I have him on my most important team and he was doing nothing. I thought about dropping him several times.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it turns out that me not having an appendix, you know, it's like that butterfly effect. You know, like something can happen, even if it's far away. But as long as it happens, it just changes. You know, it's like a domino effect, right? Like things around the world can change. So happy that I've at least contributed to that. It'll be like, you know, last year everybody was doing the giving the stats about Max Muncy, like before and after he got his glasses or whatever, corrective surgery. Mm-hmm. For his eyesight, I think we'll be looking at that this offseason, you know, in terms of Matt Chapman. So
I thought you were going to say something totally different and not go the Chapman route. I thought you were going to say Eric Wagerman has not played since you had your appendix out for the Mets. I thought that's maybe where you were going instead of the Matt Chapman route.
Yeah, I've moved on from Eric Wagerman. He was, you know, near and dear to my heart. But I've, you know, honestly, I forgot he even still played. he is not on my radar at all. But yeah, so yeah, things are going well. And again, really, really good to be back on with you guys.
Well, it's great to have you back on. And, you know, we always are welcome to having you coming in and grateful that the time allowed itself to happen on this early Saturday morning. It's a beautiful day here outside of Chicago. Hope the weather is good where you guys are. Dave, and all of the hullabaloo of having Chris back on, I forgot to say good morning to you. How are you this morning, Dave?
I'm okay, but you know all that talk last week about embracing old age and mm-hmm. changing how you do things. And
yes, sir.
Yeah, I totally abandoned that last night. So a 3 a.m. outing and cigars and just...
So you're playing hurt today is what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm day-to-day. But I don't think I'm going on the IL just yet.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I mean, hopefully after the show, you can get a little bit more rest.
When I think of Dave, I think of a wild party guy, you know,
yes.
Like that's the person that comes to mind. So I'm not surprised, you know, you're dragging your butt in here, you know, after a night of no sleep, got wasted. You know, that's Dave Funnel in a nutshell right there.
Pretty much. Yeah, it was last night.
That's awesome. Good for you guys. Well, last night I just sat around and watched my beloved White Sox thrash the Dodgers.
That was, dude, I saw it on MLB Extra Inning, the White Sox game last night. That crowd looked electric. I mean, I think of you every time I see the White Sox, you know, doing well or not doing well. But I mean, I'm happy for you, Mike. I mean, it looks like this is a fun team. They look like they're definitely on the right path, and just seeing the ballpark, I'm sure after many, you know, sad days at the park over the past couple of years to see, you know, the excitement beating the Dodgers. That was really cool to see.
They had almost 40,000 people out there last night. And I don't delude myself. I mean, I know why they're there. People were buying those tickets to see Ohtani, who did not play last night because of this knee issue that he's having, which sounds relatively minor at this point, but it was a build as a showdown early in the season between Munetaka Murakami and Shohei Ohtani. And then neither one of them played. Although Murakami is making strides and coming back, he did run last night before the game. So he's probably 2 weeks away, maybe 3 weeks away from being back for the White Sox, for those of you paying attention. But yeah, we talked a little bit about the White Sox. Obviously, they're having a great season. They seem to be going in the right direction. There are a lot of meatball fans here, unfortunately, who are, hey, we should trade everybody for Yordan Alvarez. No, we shouldn't. And two things about that. Number one, please don't use the pronoun we. You are not on the team. I hate that. That is a New York Yankee fan thing. No offense.
Hey, take it easy.
I'm kidding, of course. But the Sox are fun again, and they are actually really a big surprise team. And that was what I wanted to lead the show off with you guys today was, you know, who's the biggest surprise team to you so far in the first third of the season?
I'll go first. And for me, it's a negative one. It's the Red Sox. I had them winning actually that division, and right now they look so distraught, so like it's just unbelievable just how far they've fallen, and everyone's getting hurt, everyone's not playing well, they're not doing well at home. I don't understand what's going on. I don't know if it's just bad coaching, bad management, or just the group that they have. And you look also at, they had so much potential with so many young guys. And you look at recently all these recent trades, like where would they be right now if they hadn't made some of these trades? They'd have guys like Devers and Kyle Harrison, Chris Sale. I don't know. They seem to take two steps forward, but two or three steps backwards, and they just can't seem to get out of their own way. So I know there's a lot of season left, but they're my biggest disappointment right now.
Yeah, they've got some significant injury concerns, too, when you really look at what's happened there. I mean, obviously, it's an unknown whether or not Tristan Casas will ever be able to come back, and if he does, what he's going to be like. But Trevor Story is out with the sports hernia surgery. Roman Anthony still has this sprained finger issue, and he had underperformed before he had gotten hurt anyway. But, you know, last night they were leading off someone named Mickey Gasper, who is a Minnesota Twins castoff who's doing some catching for them. But, I mean, it's just kind of wild to see how that's happened. The other night, I don't know if you guys saw that, they made history. They had the first three guys in their lineup each struck out three times in that game, 9 strikeouts from their top three guys. It's the first time that that's happened in over 100 years, I think. So I think you're right on target with saying that the Red Sox are a disappointment. Chris, shifting over to you, what's been your biggest surprise so far this season?
I just want to point out, the question was, what's your biggest surprise? And, of course, Davey Downer. Now, he can't think of, oh, you know, an exciting team like the Rays, for example. Or he's got to go with the negative, the Red Sox, you know. Wah, like, it's wah. Just that's, wah, wah, that is... That's Dave in a nutshell, to be honest.
I'm back, baby. He's back.
He's back. He's still, I mean, I love it and I hate it if it's a player of mine. But, like, you know, getting the text about this guy got injured. I mean, you're a sick man, Dave. You really are. The pleasure that you seem to get from telling everybody about this guy who just had an awful injury is really something.
Yeah, you can be fine sailing along on a Saturday afternoon and get that message from Dave. And I'm like, I don't even want to look at it when I see that it's from X.
Right. Right. Dave you know, he's like, no way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's the more you know. That's all it is. It's the more you know.
Why can't you tell me someone hit, you know, I didn't get a text about Jacob Mizorowski striking out 15 guys. Could you send a text about that? You know, yeah, it's got to be.
I'm a little worried about his arm. And,
yeah, well, of course. Yeah. Yeah. You'll look at that and be like, oh, he was thrown too hard. You know, like you wouldn't even be able to enjoy that performance. You'd be like, oh, my God, he threw 104. He's going to go on the IL soon. Yeah. I don't know about you, man. Well, I'm glad you haven't changed at all. Not that, I expected that. All right. Well, I'll continue with the theme of disappointment, though, after saying all that, because I got to go with the Mets. I mean, you know, I just the season they're having. Listen, you guys know I've been critical of David Stearns in the past.
Yes.
And I don't like the way that he's been putting together these teams over the past couple of years. But man, I mean, you looked at that team in the beginning of the year and it was like, all right, this is like a 90, at least a 90 win team, right? I thought they had holes. I didn't think they were going to be able to compete with the Dodgers, but just the complete collapse and they're turning it around a little bit now. Mm-hmm. They're now 31 and 38. I mean, given that there's three wild cards now, which that's a whole other thing. I think it's too much, but, they could still make a run and still make the playoffs, but, they've got to be my biggest surprise in terms of how bad things just fell apart at the beginning of the year. So, I'd go with the Mets. If we want to go on the optimistic side, I mean, I got to mention the Rays. What they're doing, man. Like, I thought that team would be bottom of the AL East, and they're currently tied with the Yankees for first place. You know, they always find a way, man. Like, and it doesn't matter who's on the team. It doesn't even matter like their front office, because a lot of their guys get poached to go to other teams. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's the culture, you know, it's like whoever steps in, they just continue that raised way. And, you know, you look at that team, there's no one really, the only guy in terms of like a hitter for fantasy I was really interested in on that team. Obviously you had Caminero. I wasn't spending a first round pick on him, but I wanted a lot of Yandy Diaz. Mm-hmm. But like the rest of that team, like this is just a bunch of really no name guys. It's just been amazing what they've been able to do, competing with the Yankees. So we'll see. We'll see if that lasts. But yeah, those are my big surprises this year.
Yeah, and in defense of your Mets, I mean, one of the issues that they've had has been injuries up the middle. You know, Alvarez was out for a long time, and he's back now. Lindor is supposed to be fully cleared this week to be starting baseball activities and a rehab assignment shortly. And then, of course, you know, our favorite ex-White Sox, Luis Robert, is hurt again with a soft tissue injury.
I mean, you even said, like, this guy's going to get hurt. You know, like, that's just the track record. So this is the thing that bothers me sometimes about these general managers. And, you know, I've also been critical of Brian Cashman. Mm-hmm. I hate when they, they get their thoughts after the year about what went wrong. And then the excuse is, well, we had some big injuries.
Yeah.
Well, wait a second. You built a roster full of injury prone players. You mm-hmm. can't use that excuse. You mm-hmm. traded for Luis Robert. The guy's been injured every year. Mm-hmm. And then they even tried to load manage him, right? They didn't even play him in spring training a lot. They want to play him every other day at the beginning of the year. And he still got hurt. So I don't want to hear that excuse from anybody. You got to, I mean, listen, you can't predict injury 100%. Lindor thing is a freak thing. But, you know, there are certain things, like there are certain players you just have to know there's a high risk. And you have to build the depth to, just like in fantasy, right? You have to build the depth to mitigate that risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really interesting, Chris, because the general managers get tantalized by these types of talents, right? I mean, Luis Robert, when healthy, if healthy ever, is a 35 home run, 20 stolen base guy. He's proven it in the past, even though I don't think that's what he really is. I think that was a bit of a mirage. But that's what they're always chasing, is that upside, right? Same thing that we're doing in fantasy. But to your point, you have to do a better job of building depth. And it can't be Eric Wagman. It can't be Vidal right. Brujan. It's got to be proven guys that you can use when the situation really calls for it.
Yep.
For sure. Okay, with that, we're going to take our first ad break, and we're going to come back and do our beat writer roundup. We've got three articles that we're going to go through and get the thoughts from the guys on that, and we'll be right back. Okay, and we are back, and we are back with our friend Chris Torres. He's joined us this early Saturday morning before his day gets off and gets too crazy doing his family things and doing his work stuff. But we want to talk about some beat writer articles like we've been doing. And the first one that I found that I wanted to share with you guys this week was in The Athletic from Charlotte Varnes, and it was about Brandon Marsh, of all people, in Philadelphia. And for those of you that haven't been paying attention, and I'm guessing that most of you have, Brandon Marsh is off to a fantastic start this year. And this article really kind of highlighted some of the things that he's been doing and why he's having success. Dave, do you want to kind of take a quick look at that article and tell us a little bit what was in there?
Yeah, it was a pretty good article about a guy who I think has always been a pretty good hitter. He's got a good power speed combo, but he just couldn't really put it all together consistently. I actually thought he would break out maybe about a year or so ago, but he just never did it. But he's ever since then, he's been lowering his K rate and he's been making better choices, which is great. So this past offseason, he spent more time just working on himself. And there weren't really any big changes, which kind of surprised me because I thought that coming, you know, seeing what he's doing right now, that he really would have just, there was something different, something new that he had tried that was happening. But really, he was just refining his routine. He was being more focused on being on time, getting his body ready in the proper positioning, and just making sure that, you know, everything was connected and tight at the plate. Mm-hmm. And he kind of focused more on his mental growth. He wanted to be less hard on himself. So what he would say is that he made it a point that I'm not going to be like that. I can't be like that. I need to be a player that's there for my teammates. So what he did was he changed his approach mentally, and he had three different things that he did. He was being more stubborn, being himself, and dumb. So when he was stubborn, he was sticking to what he was doing and trying to be himself, not somebody else. When he was working on being himself, he wanted to make sure that he was being the best that he could actually be. But he was also being dumb in the sense that he was doing his homework, but not just living by it. So really just waiting for pitches that are at the heart of the plate.
Mm-hmm.
So now what's he doing? He works on facing left-handed pitchers and right-handed pitchers in batting practice. And then he works at the track jet. And now he's just more experienced. He understands who he is, what he's all about, and he's more comfortable with himself. So I think what we're seeing here is just he's more experienced, knowledgeable, and understands what's going to happen, how it might happen, and what he's capable of doing. So while there wasn't really anything major that changed, it's just good to see a growth from somebody who's finally been able to put it all together. And mm-hmm. It's just come with experience and age.
Chris, what do you think about Marsh? Do you have him on any of your teams?
You know, I do not. And he's been a guy that I've been in on in previous years, kind of that he was always a strong side platoon guy.
Mm-hmm.
And but he was always, I thought, valuable for where he would go in drafts. You know, he would usually go like past pick 300. But I felt like he offered a nice power speed combo. So I would take him there. But it just kind of like I kind of got bored of him, you know, and I felt like, nah, he kind of is what he is. I don't think there's going to be much growth. And I just ended up passing on him everywhere this year. But definitely regretting that a little bit. I mean, I didn't foresee him getting full time run, which is what the Phillies are giving him now. I mean, he's starting against lefties, and not only are they starting him, but they're hitting him fourth and fifth, which is interesting because I, you know, you think a guy like that, maybe you get some starts against lefties, but even if they do start him, you know, maybe they move him down to the bottom of the order. So hitting right in the middle of that Phillies lineup, I think, gives him a big boost, which, you know, honestly, I think was a little bit hard to predict, given that we're now in his age 28 season.
Right.
So not kicking myself too much over it. But yeah, it's definitely for anybody invested in him. It's been a nice return on investment. I got a stat for you guys. This was from another article. This was actually an article by Mike Petriello. Talked about Brandon Marsh and his historic batting average on balls in play in his career. Did you know that Brandon Marsh, out of players with at least 2,000 plate appearances in their career, has the second highest career BABIP in between Ty Cobb and Rogers Hornsby?
Whoa.
Isn't that wild?
It is wild. That is wild.
Rod Carew is number four.
Wow.
That's quite a group.
That's a nice group to be a part of. Now, obviously, Brandon Marsh is not going to have nearly that the kind of career those guys are going to have, or had, rather. But, I mean, that's just really wild. And the article talks about how just his swing, and I don't know, I don't get too deep into the weeds with this stuff, but basically Brandon Marsh's, the angle of his swing, like he's not a major pull guy, but he hits the ball. He has like a good back control, and the angle of his swing makes it hard to defend against. So these teams don't know how to defend him, and he hits the ball hard enough. He's not like Luis Arraez, right? Like, who has that great back control, but, you know, doesn't have the ability to hit the ball hard. Like, he hits the ball hard and he has that good back control, but he's not Luis Arraez, right? Like, he strikes out too much, but when he makes contact, it's like at a certain angle that it makes it more likely for it to fall in for a hit. So it's really interesting. I definitely recommend that article. That was back in, I saw it a couple weeks. Oh, it's from May 29th, actually. So not that long ago, by Mike Petriello. So it's really interesting. But yeah, he's definitely, will he keep this up? I mean, his BABIP right now is 399, which is high for even him. He's more in like that 360 range career. Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that he's just getting the everyday playing time is really going to float his value, and he's going to be, you know, I think a guy you're going to roster in most formats for the rest of the year.
Yeah, that was a great point, Chris. I think one of the things that is interesting when you look at the Phillies roster is that they really don't have much choice but to play him every day with what they have running out in the outfield right now. I mean, they're running Justin Crawford out there in center field every day, who's been kind of mid, as the kids say today. They just called up Gabriel Rincones to play right field, and he just got his first start there in right field last night. But they have a little bit of a dearth of options there. They just did trade for Derek Hill from the White Sox, who had been a useful fourth outfielder type for the White Sox, and they traded a couple of middling prospects for him to be able to get some outfield depth. But they really could use some outfield help there. Losing Max Kepler and his suspension did not help.
Also, I don't know if you saw yesterday, Adolis Garcia is on the 60 day. I'm surprised I didn't get a text from Dave.
You just figured you don't have him.
Yeah, no, I do have a couple shares actually of him. But he's on the 60 day IL with a torn lat. So, I mean, Brandon Marsh is going to be an everyday player.
Correct.
For the rest of the year, it looks like.
Correct. Okay, shifting to another article here, I wanted to get your guys' take on this one. I found it kind of fascinating. The Athletics in Las Vegas, the game that they played with the Brewers last weekend was pretty phenomenal. 5 home runs and a win against the Brewers. Martin Gallegos had a nice article about the Athletics being in Vegas. Dave, I wanted you to kind of unpack that a little bit for us. What did you see there?
Yeah, the biggest part for me was the stats that they were talking about where this ballpark is. And I think what was fascinating was that the stadium is 2,000 feet above sea level right now. Mm-hmm. And the air is incredibly thin and the ball has far less drag. But what was interesting as well was that the hot weather in Las Vegas, it encourages the ball to travel. And it also has prevailing winds that are usually blowing out. So it says there, if you're sitting in the bleachers, you don't need a glove, you need a helmet, because that ball is going to fall out there. What was interesting, too, is that they went over the stats for the Aviators, the AAA team. At home, they have a 317, 393, 514 slash line, with a 907 OPS and a 6.28 ERA.
Mm-hmm.
On the road, the Aviators have a 265, 337, 443 slash line with a 729 OPS and a 4.17 ERA. So we're seeing a drastic difference here in what's happening at home and what's on the road. The ballpark, the dimensions, the air, the wind, everything, it's really plagued, excuse me, to this offense. And we saw it this week as what, especially on Monday. That game was wild with the Brewers. If this is the future for what's happening in Las Vegas with the A's,
mm-hmm.
I think in Dynasty, we need to invest in as many A's as possible because there's something there. And either they need to fix it or do something to make it a little more balanced to the rest of the league. But the offense there, it's just, it's fun to watch. It's video game like.
Chris, thoughts on that play, on how that's playing so far, or any thoughts on the Athletics you'd like to add?
Not really. I mean, it just echoing what Dave said, you just want to be investing in A's, you know, in Dynasty. I don't know, when do they actually move to Vegas? Is it next year or the year after that?
I believe it's the year after.
Okay. So yeah, a guy like maybe Henry Bolt, who they recently called up and who's been, you know, he's been okay. He may be a guy with that power speed combo to invest in. I think he's going to be long-term the center fielder there.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob Wilson just came off the IL, Shea Langeliers, Soderstrom, Kurt, like all these guys, like the A's, this is going to be basically another Coors Field. You know, we're going to have to treat it like that. Maybe they have a humidor that mitigates it a little bit.
Sure.
But, you know, it seems like, and you're really going to want to be careful with these A's pitchers. I think we're going to have to think of, you know, some of these pitchers as almost like Rockies pitchers, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so a guy, like I know people were in on Gage Jump this year, or, you know, when he came up in Fab a few weeks ago, and mm-hmm. I was like, man, I know they're not going to play in Vegas all year. You know, they're going to go back to Sacramento, but that's still a minor league ballpark. And I just don't want to mess with that. I never wanted to mess with Rockies pitchers. You know, everybody wants to find the exception, it feels like,
right.
You know,
right.
You know, Chase Dollander was the example of that this year. Like, oh, you know, Chase Dollander, he's the guy that's going to beat Coors, and he didn't, you know, and nobody has. And I feel like you just have to accept that with the A's ballpark when they do move there full time, and even right. Be careful with it now in Sacramento. Just it's not worth it, right? There are other options. So
it's great. Yeah, great feedback on that. Dolander is scheduled to have Tommy John surgery now, by the way. He's getting a second opinion, but it looks like he's going that way. The other thing that I would just add about the A's is that Tyler Soderstrom is finally starting to come out of his spring doldrums, which is good to see for those of us who spent high draft capital. Mike Carter, Soderstrom is finally starting to come along, which is good news. Okay, shifting to our last article. And Chris, this one I chose especially for you. It was like the gods knew you were coming on this week because the clouds, when I saw this article, the clouds parted. I'm not even going to ask Dave about this one. Dave, I don't care. I don't even care what you think about this. This is for you, Chris.
When I saw this on the outline, I was just so happy.
Yeah, this is for you, buddy. So let's talk a little bit about Reed Detmers. By the way, interesting side note on Detmers before you get too far into the weeds on him. There were a lot of talks about him being a trade candidate this year. And one of the people that has come up with that is my beloved White Sox, but I don't believe that. But talk about Detmers. I know you've been a fan for a long time, and there's really good reasons for that optimism that you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it finally seems like he's arrived, right? And I never thought it would happen on the Angels. You know, how many years I've been telling you guys, this guy is a legit, maybe not an SP1, but he's an SP2. Like he is a really, really good pitcher. He just needed to get in the right situation. Maybe it was, you know, I know they have some turnover there, or they had turnover with the Angels staff this year. They brought in Mike Maddux as the pitching coach. So I don't know if it was adjustments that he made with him. But remember last year, Detmers went to the bullpen, and I always like these guys. I was big on Chris Bubich last year because I like these guys that have shown potential in the rotation. Then they get a full year or a stint in the bullpen where their stuff plays up. And I don't know what it is, you know, in terms of maybe they just change their approach or, you know, it's just a different mindset and you know, it could translate to being a starter. But I like these guys that show improved stuff in the bullpen, and Detmers was showing improved control as well. And I feel like they can carry that over when they go back to the rotation. So I have a lot of Reed Detmers. I took him as my SP4. I took him way earlier than most people were taking him in my main event. Just because, you know, funny enough, too, an hour after I picked him in my main event, there was an article. I don't know if you guys remember, but Jeff Passan put out an article. And usually Passan is like always on the money. So when I saw this, I was like, oh, my God, I was sick to my stomach. he put out a tweet about how the Angels are considering moving Detmers back to the bullpen because he wasn't pitching well in spring. And, you know, they kind of were almost like giving up on that experiment. So I'm like, I'm just going to have to drop the guy. And then he's, you know, having an incredible year. He had that like 13 or 14 strikeout game. I don't think he has many wins to show for it, but that's partially a product of, you know, he has two wins, right? Which is crazy. And he's gotten pretty unlucky. He's got a 4 ERA, but all the other indicators, he's got a 2.85 xERA, 2.87 FIP. The Sierra is 3.26. So, I mean, he's due for some really some positive regression here. So, I mean, I think it's only going to get better for him. If he gets traded, let's hope he gets traded to a place, to a good team that actually, you know, knows what they're doing with pitchers. I'm sorry, I don't know if I really want him going to the White Sox, Mike.
No, I agree. I got you.
But, you know, get him to the Brewers. All right. Let's get him in Milwaukee into their pitching lab and see what, you know, then maybe he's an SP1. yeah, really excited for him. He's looking like a breakout. And if you have him, you know, you definitely, I think there are even better times ahead. I mean, just even looking, I have his page pulled up here, 63% left on base rate. That should regress positively. So the skills are really showing that this is a legit breakout arm. You know, you look at the whip. I think the whip oftentimes can tell us, you know, can be a good indicator just on its own. It's a 1.05, you know, so that's excellent.
Yes.
So yeah, I think we're looking at the breakout. It's finally happened, and I was right all along, baby.
Yeah, we always know the growth is never linear, and that Detmers has kind of taken a circuitous path to being somebody that's really an important part of their rotation and also fantasy rotations across the board. With that, we'll take another quick break. We're going to come back and do a quick starting pitching discussion since we have Chris and Dave here together. Pick their brains a minute. We'll be right back. All right, guys, I wanted to ask you a question since I have both of you today and can lead to a larger discussion about this, but we've got about 100 games or so left in the season, and I wanted to kind of pick your brains on what your pitching strategy is going through these last 100 games. As you know, just about every fantasy player in the world has had trouble with their starting rotations and also with their bullpens, which is a whole probably separate show where we could talk each other off the ledge with bullpens, but I wanted to pick your brain on this. How do you guys analyze the starting pitcher market in leagues without trades that only have fab? So you can't go out and grab somebody, you know, find an unsuspecting owner and grab a guy like Detmers whose, you know, numbers are to somebody who doesn't know what they're doing might not look as good as what they do to you guys. How do you analyze that? What do you guys look at and how do you do that?
One thing for me, I look right away at K versus K minus BB. I like that, first of all, better than K9 and walks per nine, simply because with strikeouts and walks per nine, it's kind of inflated in the sense that you could strike out three and walk three in an inning, and it doesn't really tell the whole story. But I like K minus BB simply because it takes away, you know, the defense and luck, and it isolates what the outcomes are for a pitcher for what he's actually throwing. So if it's a high K minus walk rate, like anything above 15% for me, if I see that, that's showing me that he's throwing it well and he should be doing well. And if the other numbers like ERA and WHIP aren't there yet, they might be there if this trend continues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Chris, how about you? I know you've got a lot of different things that you look at when it comes to pitching.
Yeah, I mean, I don't do anything crazy. I mean, the ERA indicator that I like the best is Sierra, which I know a lot of people use. I don't love XFIP or FIP or XERA. I don't know. I just haven't found those to be as predictive. So Sierra is my go-to because I like to find Sierra incorporates a lot in terms of ground ball rate, you know, which I think is a skill and a skill that we desire, right? We want pitchers that are going to keep the ball in the ballpark. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that I look at that K minus walk like everybody else, but that's kind of, I try not to look like Sierra kind of incorporates that already. So I don't want to get, you know, be looking at too many different things, but I will take a peek at it sometimes just to make sure everything lines up. CSW, I think too, like swinging strike percentage is, even if someone has a good Sierra, I do want to look at the swinging strike because I think that's what really matters, man. You want guys that can get swing and miss because these pitchers that survive on just like called strikes or control, I feel like that's only sustainable for so, like if they're getting good results, it's only sustainable for so long. Like you've got to be able to get swing and miss. So that is, I probably weigh that more than most people in terms of looking at swinging strike. One thing that I've incorporated this year, which got me onto one pitcher that, you know, we mentioned earlier that had an absolutely like a historic game yesterday, is Jacob Mrazowski. And the metric that I've been incorporating this year is ball percentage. So ball percentage really, it's basically another level, you know, of walk rate. You know, there's still with walk rate, there still can be some noise in that, you know, because sometimes like guys, for example, like if they have a really low, like let's say in their counts where it's three balls and two strikes, if they have a really high walk rate in those counts, that could be a little bit that can be variance sometimes. So taking it an even step further, like looking at a pitcher's ball rate, I think is going to give you a better picture of their control. And I remember in the offseason looking at Jacob Mrazowski, you know, we knew he had incredible stuff. We knew he had the swing and miss, but the big knock on him was, well, you know, look at his walk rates, you know, even through the minors, his walk rates were really bad last year. They weren't good. But I remember looking at his ball rate for the year and it was, don't quote me, but it was like around 33%, which is really good. And I think it was like top 30 or something like that. And I'm like, that's interesting because you wouldn't think, you know, usually someone with that high of a walk rate would have a ball rate more in like the 37, 38% range. So I felt like there was room for growth in terms of that walk rate with Mrazowski. And I'm like, if this guy just brings down the walk rate, he's going to be DeGrom. He's going to be like, he's going to be, you know, a top five pitcher. Yeah, it seems like that's come to fruition here. I think that's something. You know what's annoying though about a ball percentage is that it's not available like on FanGraphs, so you have to calculate it yourself. But I just have a leaderboard, a custom leaderboard in FanGraphs where I put pitches and balls, and I just manually calculate, you know, what the ball rate is, and I feel like that's been worth it. This year, it's helped me identify some guys that have some better underlying skills than the surface stats would indicate.
That's interesting because I was going to ask where you got that information because I don't know that like super handy or available to a lot of people. That's a great
FanGraphs. Come on, like I don't understand. It's not hard, right? Like it's not hard to just put that on your page. So I don't know why they've been. I know a lot of people are starting to use that, so I don't know why they don't do that. I think we will see that eventually. But yeah, you could also do like I do have an Excel like form, like a spreadsheet set up for that, but I have to do it like every time. So like if there's a pitcher I'm looking at, I'll just pull up my leaderboard and just, you know, calculate what the ball percentage is and Yeah, it's annoying, but what are you going to do?
Chris, I'm glad to see that your level of irritation has not dropped with some of these.
Oh, no, no, no. It's there. Yeah, my surliness. Yeah, it's that'll never go away. Yeah.
Okay, switching up on that a little bit, if you guys feel comfortable sharing, who are some targets that you're looking at for these last 100 games that might be available?
I'll go through mine quickly. I kind of like Shane Drohan. He's got 6 pitches. His fastball is pretty good, and he's got 4 pitches right now with a 32%+ whiff rate. And he plays for Milwaukee, which is actually an underrated metric I kind of use. I like to see where these guys are playing and, you know, which team can help them develop. And Milwaukee's one of the best. Casey Mize, he's coming back from a lower body injury, and he should be back by the time this is released. Mm-hmm. And he's been pretty good when healthy, including a pretty good 20% K minus walk rate.
And he's always been one of your guys.
Pardon me?
You've always liked Mize. He's always been one of your guys.
Yeah. Yeah. He's good. He just can't stay healthy. And then the last one is, it's a more of a dark horse, but Hurston Waldrop. He had a great splitter last year and a nice curve, but he just couldn't be too consistent. He just came back from a loose body's injury, but he's back in the minors right now. So
he
plays for the Braves, which is just another franchise that I look to for pitching.
Well, now with Spencer Strider, being removed from the game yesterday with arm soreness and his 5.31 ERA, could be a sooner trip back to Atlanta for Waldrop than what we had anticipated.
Could be, yeah.
Chris, any targets you feel comfortable sharing?
No, I'm not comfortable. Move on. No, Bryce Miller. I was trying to pull up his percentage. I mean, he's owned across like NFBC 15 teamers for sure. But like in Yahoo leagues, I think Bryce Miller might be someone that's available. And just doing a quick filter here for the past 30 days, Bryce Miller's skills look outstanding. Yeah. You know, I was talking about ball percentage before. He's at 29% over his last 4 starts, which is like basically like elite territory. And he's also got the swing and miss with a 12.8 swinging strike rate. This is over 24 innings here. So 30.5% K minus walk. He's getting fortunate with his batting average and balls in play at 106. But this is a guy that definitely, you know, at a minimum is a home streamer. Right. We love targeting Seattle pitchers. So that's someone I think, in like a 12, 10 team league, I think at least could be a home streamer for you with the potential for more. So it looks like, Bryce Miller is definitely back after a frustrating year last year. And this is a little bit more of a tepid recommendation, but right now the skills look good. And that's Noah Cameron, guy who's probably available in 12 teamers. He started out the year rough, but over the past 30 days, a 2.71 Sierra, swing and miss 10.6. So again, this is more of a tepid. I don't know if you need, but I think he's a matchup dependent guy that, you may be able to get in one of in a shallower league here that, could be, could be decent. And I'm still on the Matt Liberatore train, man. Like I picked him up in Fab. I was a little disappointed in his last start. And I think he pitches today. So we'll see what happens. But prior to that last start, I mean, he looked like the pitcher that we saw in spring training, who was just dominating and was getting so much helium. And then it was like the season started and he just went back to being old Matt Liberatore. He wasn't getting swing and miss. But even after that last dud, he's got a 3.18 Sierra over his last 4 starts, 31.4% strikeout rate to go along with the swinging strikes at 12.1%. Mm-hmm. So his command and control leave a little bit to be desired. So I think he's another matchup dependent guy. I wouldn't start him on the road in like a 12 teamer, but I think at home, St. Louis is better than we expected. I think, the context isn't bad in St. Louis. So I think he might be, a guy that's out there that you can extract some value from moving forward.
He should just be so much better than what he is, Liberatore. Yeah. When you see him throw, you're like, Jesus.
I think he's going to put it together. He might be my new Reed Detmers. Yeah. I think there's going to be sometimes my dad always said this and he was right. He said left-handers take a while to figure it out.
Well, they do.
And I think so you saw with Detmers and I think Liberatore could be that guy. Like, you know, we may be looking next year. Maybe I'll come on next year and we'll do a segment on Liberatore's breakout or maybe 2 years from now. You know, like it just may take some time, but I think he will eventually.
If you get a chance, watch him pitch, because the way that he attacks righties and lefties is just so starkly different with his pitch mixes for both of those guys that it seems like he's still tinkering and doesn't really know exactly what he wants to do. And I agree with your dad on that. I think lefties are almost always a little bit more of a difficult, you know, case in that regard, just because it takes them a little bit longer to figure it out. He's also throwing at a little bit different arm angle every year too. You know, he started off a little bit lower than where he's at now. It's going to be interesting to watch, but he's still only 26. This is a guy that could come on quickly once he figures it out. So I agree with you guys on that. I do really like Liberatore, and I have him stashed on a few benches where I can have him. Okay, we're going to transition to the last part of our show. Chris, thanks again for being on with us today. You know, it's been great to rekindle this relationship, and we've always still been able to be friends through the text message chains and whatnot. It's different not having to be on the show. But I wanted to ask you, you know, at the end of the show, we always do our mental health moment. And you being the father of a couple of young kids, you know, your kids are a little bit younger than Dave's kids and my kids. How do you balance all the activities that are on your family calendar in the summertime? You know, summertime is usually a busy time. My wife and I refer to May as May-cember now. Graduations, birthdays, friends going out, wanting to meet up for dinner, kid activities, dance recitals, baseball games. How do you balance it all?
Not well. it's been crazy. Like I was just talking to my wife the other day. It's like these schools, man, they want to pack everything in to these last, like, you know, 4 or 5 weeks of the year, you know, the chorus concerts, the field day, like every activity is like crammed into this time frame. And it's, you know, and then my son, like, I got to run here after this, like my sons, they're doing like I have a client and then I have a little league parade to go to and it's my son's final game. So like baseball season's ending for my son. He's 6.
Right.
You know, it's ending for him today. So that's actually like a little disappointed, but also like a little relieved because, you know, it's like got that going on, got the end of the year stuff. It's kindergarten graduation. My daughter's 4th grade moving up graduation.
Oh yeah.
It just never ends. You know, so there's always, for me, it's just, I got to stay organized. I'm a very, like, I live through Google Calendar and I notice that when I like don't put things in the calendar or, you know, I'm not like looking ahead to, you know, making commitments and then like, I'm like, oh crap, like I had this for that day, you know, like I just have to be really strict with like, yeah, I got so much going on that I just have to visualize it and keep some, have a system to keep myself organized. Otherwise I feel it like mentally, I'm just so scattered. Cause I'm like, sure. Oh, I had something that day, or I know I had something that day. So that's my advice to people. Just make sure that you have some system keeps you organized, because it gives you a sense of control too. You know, so yeah, that's I can't say I'm doing great with it. I'm just kind of like flying by the seat of my pants, but that's what I'm trying to do at least.
It's always a work in progress, right? Because with little kids, you have to tweak that because you try to have it planned down to the minute. It just never works that way.
You'll be trying to you got to be able to stay flexible. Yeah,
right. You'll be running out the door and then Daniel doesn't have his spikes. You know, it's that's just the way that it goes. We just have to kind of roll with it for sure. Dave, how about you? How do you keep it all organized? I know you got a couple of weeks of your school years to go still, and you're also balancing a lot of things as dad and husband as well. How do you do it?
I can't stress enough, and I think that's a great idea, just to write things down, just to visualize it so you can prepare for the future and know what's coming up. What I try and do, though, when I have all these things going on, I just try and remember of everything that's happening, what I've done the least of last. So if I haven't seen friends in a while, I try and connect. Or if I've been so focused on work and friends or something, I'll try and hang out with my kid just for a little bit, or try and do something, just trying to make up for the time missed from before. So it's more just reflecting on what I've not been doing, even though I've been busy doing a lot of things. And just trying to make sure that those aren't forgotten.
Mm-hmm. That's so, a great point. Yeah, I'm glad. That's a good reminder for me, too, because sometimes you do have to take a step back and reflect, like everything is a balance, right? So, yeah. Like, if you have a lot going on, inevitably, something's going to fall a little out of balance. So being able to stop yourself every so often and reflect on, like, okay, what do I need to tend to right now and keep it in a good place, whether it's relationships, health, whatever it is. So yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, for me, I think it's just really simple. As an older person with older kids, I just say no a lot more than what I ever did before. And I know when my body needs that rest and recuperation. So if I get a phone call from somebody who says, hey, let's meet up for a beer and pizza at 3:30 on Saturday afternoon, and I'm just not feeling 100%, like I'm behind that, or that I need that rest more importantly, mm-hmm. I will say no to some of those things. And I think when I was younger, I did not do that. So I just try to keep things in moderation, which is, you know, a challenge for me sometimes, whether it be my eating, whether it be having a beer or two with friends, whatever it might be, just try to keep those things in balance and keep it in moderation. So I know that we're coming up to the end of our time here. Chris, I just wanted to say thanks for coming on. It's great having you back on. We hope to be able to do this again with you soon. I know that you're a really, really busy guy. Can you let everybody know where they can find you on Twitter and X and social media?
Yeah, I'm at Torres Takes. And yeah, that's it. I don't know. I feel like I'm trying to take a little bit of a step back from social media. Mm-hmm. Again, trying to prioritize the things that really matter. And sometimes you just get lost in that stuff. I know we've talked a lot about just like phone use and in the past, mm-hmm. as part of our mental health minute, mm-hmm. and really just keeping that in check. So been doing a little bit better with that and just trying to take a step back. So, I'm at Torres Takes, maybe I'll pick that up at some point again, but,
sure.
Yeah, but no, it's good to be on with you guys. Miss doing this every week. But definitely we'll figure out a time for me to come back on. This was fun.
Awesome. It's great to see you. Great to hear from you. Your hair and beard are looking on point as usual. Things never change, which is good. Dave, do you want to lead us out here with your baseball quote for the week?
Let's go with old friends are the chapters you never want to close, no matter how many new ones you write.
All right. Hey, that's a good one. Okay, guys. Well, for Chris and for Dave, this has been the Breakfast with the Beats episode 10, if you can believe that. Dave and I will be back next week with another episode. Until then, take care of yourselves. Peace and have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. Everything's going your way, then along comes Debbie Downer. Always here to tell you about a new disease, a car accident, or kill.